damn it. That's the last thing I want to happen right now, right? So it was the first spin of Chrome Horn of the season, right? And I'm the first one to do it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. And, you know, a lot's changed since we last spoke a year ago. Most notably, like, how much weight did you lose?
Well, a lot has changed. I've been racing more often now. I got my eyes. I had surgery on my eyes. I can see now. Last time I was doing this podcast with you, I had to wear glasses just to see you, right? So I decided to start working out again. I woke up on New Year's and I was like, got on a scale and I was like, God damn, I got to lose some weight. And stopped drinking wine during the week and stopped eating snacks and eating as much sugar. Tried to cut out a lot of sugar out of my diet. And then as the weight started to come off, I started riding my bike again and just fell in love with my bicycle again.
Yeah, I was, we were talking before this recording. I love your posts. Like, man, Paul's up at 3 a.m. in his garage getting his bicycle out. It's like he's like Jocko or David Goggins out here. He's getting her done.
Well, that's what time I wake up at. So my last go to the bathroom, my bladder problem went, as you get older, you'll find out when you get older that you have to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night once you get old. And that last time is usually around 3:30, 4 o'clock, and then I'm up after that. So I go out in the garage, get my bike ready, have a little bite to eat, and then I'm out the door as soon as the sun cracks, the sunrise cracks open. So I like to get all my workout and everything done, by 9 o'clock in the morning, and then I've got the whole day to just do whatever.
No, that's great. What was the hardest part for you? Was it, cutting out, because everyone struggles with different stuff depending on their lifestyle, whether it's bread or pasta or, legitimate dessert or the wine. What was the hardest for you to cut out?
All of it. It was all of it. I mean, I like desserts. I like cookies. I like ice cream. I'm doing so much cardio now and riding my bike so much that I can pretty much eat whatever I want now because I've dropped all the weight and I'm burning so many calories a day that, I'll have a scoop of ice cream and I'll have a cookie here. But one of the biggest things I cut out is soda too. I cut out, I was drinking like 10 Diet Cokes a day and now I drink water all the time, I've always drank Diet Coke for forever since I was a kid. And I've cut that out.
Probably helps your sleep too. Like that's a decent amount of caffeine kind of trickled in throughout the day.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it helps my sleep or not, but lately I've been having like crazy vivid dreams. And I normally wake up with like after a dream with a song in my head, and that's usually why I sing it as I'm walking out to the garage, because I always wake up with some random song in my head for some reason. And I've just been having these like super vivid animated dreams of just, and I don't even remember what they are. I just know that there's this, I don't feel like I'm sleeping all that much because you're kind of in this state of like whatever's happening in the dream. But I go to bed early, so like I go to bed at like 8 o'clock, and then I'm up at 3:30 or 4, so it's six hours of sleep, which
right.
is normal. But you probably go to bed at 10 or 11 and get up at 10 or 11.
No, he's almost 1 year old now. I got a little guy, so I'm up with him at 6 a.m. at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many times was he up during the night to eat, though, when he was newborn?
Oh, I was up all night, He's better now. He's sleeping through the night. I bet you that the vivid dreams, from my understanding, just listening to health guys, is cutting out the alcohol, and you get like, because it suppresses dreams and your like REM cycle. So I bet you, when you slow down on the, you know, having even a glass of wine every night, I bet you that kind of backlog of dreams starts rushing through.
Maybe, I don't know. I mean, I take this stuff at night, which is like, I don't know. It's like one of them is a calming cocktail, it's called, and the other one is like called Blackout. And it's basically where it's like magnesium or something. And, you know, it's just a drink, a powder you mix in a bottle of water, and I drink a bottle of that. But it gives me some crazy dreams. That's all I know. Like, some of them are like axe murdering. Some of them are like axe murdering dreams, but like, you know, it's just weird. I wear one of those rings that like tracks your sleep and all that, and it never really says I got a good night's rest. It always says I'm restless. And I didn't sleep all that well, but the main thing that I've been watching on that is, you know, how my heart rate has come down now that I've dropped a whole bunch of weight. I mean, my heart rate was statically was pretty high. It was in the 80s and 90s, and now my resting heart rate is down in the high 50s. So, you know, all of that stuff was bad. I mean, I went to the doctor right after the new year and got a physical and the blood work, and the guy was like, oh, you're like borderline diabetic and you got high blood pressure. And that's when I decided, okay, that's it. I got to start, you know, training hard.
For sure.
And I trained every day. Like I was always training because it's just part of my routine, but I was just lifting too much weights and eating too much and, you know, just cut out all the weights. I still lift weights. I do like half an hour, 40 minutes of weights every day, but it's lighter and it's push-ups and sit-ups and calisthenic type stuff rather than, you know, bench press and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that stuff doesn't help on the bicycle. Let's jump into the SRX deal, because when we last spoke, you were kind of in the middle of that series going into the season. From, I guess, your perspective, what shook out in the last couple races with you there?
Well, I mean, that's a long story, but you know, I came into this season super motivated to do well. I knew what I needed to do to have a good season. I knew that I needed to keep the tires under me. I felt like I was in better shape than I've ever been, and got to the first race immediately right out of the box. I was quick in practice, got into the first race, and right away in the first race, I think five laps into it, I got into turn three at Stafford, and I braked a little bit too late, and I axle hopped a little bit. And you know, once you know you've driven a stock car, and I'm sure you've driven one on an oval, like once it's axle hops, you gotta let off the brake to get it to stop, right? Or otherwise you just skid along and you can't stop. And I was like, it started to axle hop. So I got off the brake, and then I just got on the brake, but I was right there, and I got into the back of Kenny Schrader as he was turning in. And it wasn't a hard hit, but it sent him into a spin. And I was like, God damn it. That's the last thing I want to happen right now, right? So it was the first spin, chrome horn of the season, right? And I'm the first one to do it.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm like, so I finished well in the heat. I come in the pit lane and I get out of the car, and here comes Kenny. He comes up and he's livid. You're getting wrecked. You know, next time I see you, you're getting wrecked. And I apologized to him, and I said, okay, it was an accident. I didn't mean to do it. It wasn't intentional. You know, I locked up the rears, and he didn't want to hear it. So I got through that race. First weekend, had a really good second heat, had a good main finish. I think I finished fourth. It was NASCAR guys, 1, 2, 3, and then I was fourth. And you had current cup drivers out there this year, like Denny Hamlin and, you know, Kyle Busch and Brad Keselowski. These guys are the best of the best out there. So I thought fourth was pretty darn good coming out of there. So we get to the next weekend, and we're back at Stafford again because the track in Vermont was flooded because of all the rain they had up there. So I'm having another good night, and I finished second to Tony in the heat race, first heat race, which put me to the back of the field because wherever you finish in the first heat race, you invert for the second. So I finished second, so I started 12th, and I'm coming through the field and having another good night, and I get up to like fifth, and I pass Kenny Schrader around the outside of turn three and four. Clean, no contact, no leaning on each other. And I look in the mirror and I see he's right there. I'm like, oh, here we go. And I get into turn one, and he just drills me from behind and just sends me up the track and spinning out. I'm like, okay, well, I guess we're even now.
Right.
And, you know, they interview me, and I'm like, well, he told me he was going to do that, and that's, you know, and then his interview, he was like, he turned himself, you know. He gave me one of those, the old NASCAR. Right. He turned himself. He spun out on his own routine. So I thought the beef was over at that point. I had another pretty good night that night. I left there after the second round two was second in the points to Ryan Newman. And we get to the third race, which was, I can't remember the name of the track, but it was a pretty high bank, pretty fast oval. And I had another good heat, two good heats. And then in the main, we get down to 10 laps to go. It was a pretty long final. I think it was like 110 laps or something. And the tire wear was super high at this track, so that we were slipping and sliding all over the place at this track, and it was pretty high banked, but I was running about 5th, 6th, 7th in that race, and Kyle Busch was in it, and Clint Bowyer, and Brad Keselowski, Tony, they were like the first five cars, so I was like right there with those guys, and we get down to about 10 laps to go, and there's a yellow for something. And Joseph Newgarden and I on the restart, I'm on his inside, and or he's on my inside, I'm on his outside, and we go to restart, and we start leaning on each other, just door banging through the corners. And he's leaning on me, and then the next corner I squeeze him, and it just started that for about four or five laps. And I got to his inside. And then leaned on him really hard going into three and four. And we went around the corner just basically hooked together. And I was trying to push him up the track. But he was still there on my outside. And then we went another lap around side by side. And I decided to – I saw that Clint Bowyer was going down and onto the apron – because my car was it was pretty tight at that track. I couldn't get it to, like, cut in the center.
Right.
And then I saw up the track that Clint Bowyer was, like, passing guys on the apron. He'd get on the apron, get the thing turned, and then come off the corner. So I tried it going around three and four, and I got down on the apron, and then I got about halfway clear, halfway alongside of Newgarden. And as I was on the apron, the thing, you know, you've driven on over, it loosened up big time. It kind of stepped out on me.
Yep.
But I was into the throttle by then. And I just like chased it up the track. I was like, oh, it's like, I'm just sliding up the track. And I connected with Newgarden. Basically, his nose was at about my A pillar.
Okay.
As we came off the corner, and it just hooked me.
Right.
And it hooked me into the wall, and we both crashed out. Well, it was a big pileup behind us because the track was pretty fast. And it was like one of those tracks that once a crash happens, everybody's in it. And Kenny was involved in it, but he was a couple cars behind us. So it had really nothing to do with him other than he was involved in it. And after the race, he went on one of the, did an interview and said, "I'm done. If Paul Tracy's racing out here, I'm not coming back."
Did he
And
have did he have words with you after that wreck?
yeah, he came over to me. I was still in my car because they were trying to fix it. And he came over to my car and he was like, "Hey, what happened?" I said, he goes, "Who turned you?" I said, "I think it was Newgarden because I was racing with him." And he's like, "Okay." And he walked away. And then he did a TV interview basically saying, "If Paul Tracy's still racing in this series, I quit," or something that, to that effect. I'm not coming back."
Did
So I was like, "Oh."
he like do you think he ha like is that does he have that much pull there, compared to you, I guess?
Well, I guess so, because I got kicked out. He was still racing, right? So I guess he does have that kind of pull. But the next day, I didn't hear anything from anybody that night. In the about 4 o'clock the next day, I get a call from the guy who runs SRX. It's a guy named Don Hawk, and he wanted to hear my version of what happened. And I told them basically exactly what I told you. I said, coming down at the end of the race, and Newgarden and I were, battling for fifth on track with under 10 laps to go. And now it's elbows out, right? You're really going for it. And I said, we were leaning on each other for like 4 or 5 laps. And I said, I started sliding up the track, and we got connected and we wrecked, just one of those things. And he's like, "Well," he got all mad and he was like, "I don't hear any remorse in your voice." And I'm like, I don't know what you want me to be remorseful about. I said, it's not like I wanted it to happen. I understand these cars are expensive to fix. That was another thing too, is like, before the season even started, like Tony sat us all down in his motor home. And he's like, "Hey, look, we had a lot of crashes the last 2 years. It costs a lot of money to fix these cars. And you know how it is. Like when you wreck one of those, even if it's a fiberglass body, it still costs fucking a ton of money, especially if you get frame damage or an A-arms and, wheels and, so I get it. It's not cheap. And plus there's no time either. You're going week to week to week and you're on the road. It's not like you can go back to the shop and fix it. So it's a lot of work for these guys. So, then you go out and guys start wrecking each other. So there was kind of this message going down of like, "Hey, we got to knock this off. This guy's wrecking each other and dumping each other," and because that was happening quite a bit. And so anyway, I get the call, and Don says, "Well, we got to do something. If this was NASCAR, we'd have to, do a penalty and blah blah blah." I said, "Well, tell me what's your penalty. Tell me what you're thinking." He goes, "Well, we might sit you out for a race or more. We don't know yet. We haven't decided." I said, "Call me when you want to tell me then." Right? And he called me back about an hour later, and he's like, "You know what? We're gonna maybe suspend you for a race, and then we'll reevaluate it after the next race." And I'm like, "Okay, it is what it is." Right?
Right.
So. And then two or three days, about three or, I don't know, two, th 3 or 4 days later at the next race, they basically announced that I was out for the rest of the year. So they never told me that. They said they'd reevaluate it after one race. So I was just like, okay. And then the odd thing is I then got another call from him. So I was kind of ticked off at that point about how that was handled. And then they said, "Well, do you want to come and do the TV for the last two races and be the TV commentator?" And I'm like, in my mind, I was like, "No, I don't really want to do that." And he's like, I talked to Lisa about it, and she was like, "Just go do it. You got nothing else to do. Just, even if you don't ever drive with them again, just end things the right way and just go do it." So I
Right.
agreed to go do it, and then that deal was pulled off the table too. So that's kind of where it ended up, And then I got the call to go race in this race in Brazil, right after SRX was over, and on a better note, went down there and kicked ass, and had fastest lap of the weekend, and had a great weekend. So it kind of ended my summer on a good note.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, how did even if it however you feel about the competitiveness of the Brazil series, a win is a win. Like that's gotta feel really good getting a win.
Well, the one main guy that was there that was the hot shot is a guy named Gabriel Casagrande, and he's the 2021 Stock Car Series champion. He's the Porsche Cup champion in Brazil, and he's leading the championship this year in Stock Car Series in Brazil. So he was there at that race, and you know how it is. Anywhere you go, it doesn't matter where you go, whether it's in a go-kart or it's a big race, when you go to a local track and you go to somebody's local track, there's always fast guys there that you don't know about, right? There could be big name drivers, but there's always a local and local guys that know the track really well, and they're quick. So there was, there was some legit quick guys there. And this guy, Casagrande, he actually just did a simulator test last week for Jimmy Vassar for KV race, or not KV, for the Lexus team.
Yeah, yeah.
So they
Vassar, Sullivan.
Vassar. Jimmy called me after I got back from Brazil. He's like, "Hey, tell me about that guy Casagrande." He goes, "Big house. Tell me about this guy, Big House." I'm like, right? Because Casagrande is Big House.
Yeah, yeah.
Spanish.
Yeah.
She's like,
yeah.
"Tell me about this guy Casagrande, Big House." I'm like, I guess he's the guy down there in Brazil. He's like the hot shot. He's young. He's like super fit. And he goes, "Well, you were quicker than him, right?" I'm like, "Yeah, I was quick. I had a quicker lap time than him in qualifying. I beat him in the first race, but I had a shitty second race. But he's apparently the guy down there." He goes, "Yeah, we're going to test him on the simulator. He's flying to Charlotte." I guess he did the test this last Monday. A simulator test at the Lexus simulator, the Toyota simulator for NASCAR. So, and I said to Jimmy, I said, how do you evaluate a guy for a race seat based off of a simulator? Because everybody that I've talked to, I had a long conversation with as we're sitting around, and I don't know how many sims you've driven or if you've driven any high dollar sims.
I've got a decent one, but I did a KBM race at Mosport, so I drove that simulator, that Toyota simulator in Charlotte.
Okay, so you've actually been in the Toyota simulator. So, I know, like, I have a simulator. It's sitting right behind me right here, and it's a $60,000 simulator, and it doesn't feel anything like the real thing, And, it moves around, but there's no G-forces, there's no heat, and you can't feel the tire on the road. There's vibration and there's like noise, like you can hear tire noise and rocks and pebbles, but you actually don't, there's no feel of the tire connected to the road. So when the car goes into a slide, it's all based off of visual of how you react to it. So it's completely different than driving a real race car. And everybody that I've talked to that's driven, this is a home sim, and it's a really nice home sim, super expensive, and four axis motion and really nice piece. But everybody that I've talked to, like I was sitting in the motorhome at one of the SRX races with Newgarden and Brad Keselowski, and we were talking about sim stuff, and they're like, "Oh, it's fucking useless," Newgarden was like, "Yeah, like the last 2 years at Indy," we based all of our setup work at Penske off of the Chevy simulator. And he goes, "We sucked for 2 years. Like the tire model was wrong. And they were sold on this. You got to set the car up on the simulator." And, and I haven't driven the Chevy simulator, and I haven't driven the Dallara simulator, and I haven't driven the Toyota simulator, and I haven't driven the Honda simulator. So I've never been in a high dollar simulator. But the guys that I know that have driven them have said, it's not the same. It's still not the same. It's not 100%. So how you base evaluating a driver for his race ability in real life on something that's not completely 100%, I don't know how you come to a conclusion on that, because basically you have to be like a gamer, you know, because it's like, and I don't know, you've driven the Toyota simulator. What is it like?
It's definitely not the same. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I think you are evaluating his simulator ability. You're not, you know, there's a bunch of, if that's the case, why not just hire the guy who won, you know, the latest esports championship or the latest iRacing championship for your ride, right?
Yeah, that's what I said to Jimmy. I said, you know, like how, like, I said, what are you evaluating? He goes, well, you know, we want to know what his feedback is. When we make changes on the simulator, we want to know if he can feel the changes. What do the changes do? If it's not accurate, how are you evaluating what he can feel? But so I guess they look, you know, he said, you know, look for if his times are erratic and up and down and things like that. But I mean, I've spent quite a bit of time in a simulator and I'm all over the goddamn place, you know, on it, you know, I'm spinning out and crashing and, you know, I can do a pretty quick time, but it's, I don't know. I mean, it's just, it's an odd dynamic, but, you know, Jimmy was like, hey, it's working for us. We're doing pretty well on track. We go to most of the racetracks and our setups are pretty good. We're competitive out of the box. So this is the way we do it. So, you know, which is surprising to me because Jimmy is super old school. I don't think he's ever even driven a simulator himself, and he's kind of a throwback old school guy, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you've got, you know, even if it's not there yet, I think regardless the way technology advances, you know, whatever, how much better it gets every year, eventually you got to be there, so you may as well start now, because as soon as, you know, AI is legitimate AI, you're gonna get the right setup off the frickin' simulator, that's for sure.
Well, there's one. I'm not going to name names of teams, but there's a team here that's won an IMSA championship that has shops here in town, and I actually went by there the other day because I'm buddies with the guy that owns the team, and I hadn't been there since early in the spring, and I walked in their one smaller shop, and I was like, holy shit, they got this sim going in there, and it's like a $2 million sim that, like, it's completely closed in. They've closed in the shop inside the shop with a box, and this one's like slides across the floor back and forth. You know, it's the same sim that Ferrari has. It's got a 290 degree screen that's like, it's got to be 15 feet tall, and you know the circumference of the screen is probably 30 feet in diameter or more. So, I mean, this thing is on like sliders, and the whole rig like slides back and forth, you know? So they have to do like 40 or 50 hours of setup work on it once they get the installation done. And I said, well, I'll come down and drive it. They were going to fly somebody in to drive it. I said, I'll come down and drive it for 4 or 5 hours a day just to see, you know, help you out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Jumping back to the SRX deal, I'm curious, I don't know if you can answer the question or not. You had, that wine sponsor on the car. How does that deal work? Did you guys get a paycheck? Were you able to bring your own sponsor and try and put some money in your jeans that way?
I have a guy that I've known a long time, that used to be an agent and sponsor finder of mine. And his name is Doug Barnett. He's a good friend of mine. And he has a bunch of sponsors in his portfolio that he places the sponsorships with. So he has Geico, he has Camus, he has Sport Clips, and a few others. So if you look throughout the years of going back, you'll see that at one time I drove a stock car that had Sport Clips on it, and I drove the Indy car that had Geico on it at the Indy 500 a couple times, and this, he's got Camus as one of his deals in his quiver, I guess, and he placed the money with SRX. But money in my pocket, no, I didn't get anything. I didn't get anything out of it. But I got a pretty cool sponsor, and they send me wine that I only drink on Saturday night now. So I'm not drinking it every single night of the week, which is probably a good idea anyway.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. I had a beer sponsor for a while, and they were just giving us beer, and I decided it probably wasn't even worth it. Yeah,
pallets of beer. I had a beer sponsor too, and like, when I drove for Budweiser back in '95, and like literally, they're like, "Hey, what do you need drinks?" I'm like, "Oh yeah, whatever. Just send over whatever." And a truck came over with like, you know, 5 pallets of Budweiser. I'm like, "What am I gonna do with all this Budweiser?" You know.
Yeah.
Just end up giving it away to people.
No, exactly. It's, you know, you got to have it around so you're not drinking something else when the time comes. But
the problem is you can't give away Bud Light right now. Nobody wants it.
No, not even for free. No,
I know.
That's true. So, do you think and maybe it sounds like you don't know, but do you think you'll get the invite back to SRX? I mean, I think you were such a draw there that, you know, they need someone like you, and I don't think they have anyone else that kind of fits the bill.
I don't know. I don't have my hopes up, and I'm not going to hold my breath right now. But you know, the series now is kind of, it's kind of gotten away from what it was originally designed to be. You know, like in the beginning, it was a TV show, a racing TV show, and they wanted contact and they wanted bumping and grinding and they wanted drama and they wanted guys to play it up and that's what I did, and it's kind of turned into like this. It's now it's like a professional racing series now. It's kind of not really a TV show anymore. So I mean it's as serious as a heart attack now. With, you know, when you got current level cup guys, they're not coming there to goof around. And like, I mean, not that there's goofing around, but you know, like those guys, they want to win, and like I want to win too. But and everybody does. When the green flag drops, everybody's in the same mindset of that they want to win. But it's just kind of gotten away from what the original concept of what Ray Everingham, his original vision of what it was going to be. It's kind of turned into something else, and now it's you know, there's really, which is sad, there's really not many open wheel guys left in it. Like there was me, and Kanaan only does a couple now. They only had him do 2 last year. Newgarden did 1 race. Elio did 2 or 3. Marco is there. So there was really only Marco and I that were full time, and then the rest was all like, you know, cup guys. So, you know, and then you had like, you know, current cup guys. Like I've been retired nearly 15 years, you know, and I said to Don Hawk, I mean, earlier in the year, way back in the spring before SRX started, they had a test day at, I think it was Caraway, and they had Kyle Busch and Keselowski and all these, Logano drove the car, and they had all these guys come out and drive the car. They had got a day in the car. I'm like, I never got a day in the car. I show up and I get 5 laps and we go racing. I said, these guys are racing like 500 to 800 miles every single weekend. Like if Kyle Busch goes and does trucks, Xfinity, and Cup all in the same weekend, he's doing close to 1,000 miles of racing in a stock car every single weekend. And you give him a test day before he gets to come run the SRX car. I said, that guy doesn't need a test day. I said, he's like racing every single week all year round. I said, I haven't driven the car in 11 months. It's the last time I was in the car. You know, and he's like, so it's kind of gotten, which is a shame, it's kind of gotten geared towards, you know, and I get it. I mean, people want to see the top cup guys. But, you know, in the beginning, when Ray started it, you know, he kind of envisioned getting some champions from everything, sports cars and motorcycles, or just give different guys a shot at it, and it's kind of just turned into another version of stock car racing.
Right, right. So now you're fit. You've done the race in Brazil. You got a win under your belt. What do you have your sights set on next? As far as, and do you have desires to run a whole season somewhere?
I don't really have desires to run a whole season. I would like to do some this and that. I'd like to take your dad's car out next. see what he says about it. But I don't have any game plan set out. And, if something comes along, I'd like to run, I would like to run some endurance races. I have a buddy that, and I don't know if you've heard of this, but there's a 24-hour race at Spa, and they're like these little small, they're almost like Legends cars, they look like. They're little small cars in Europe, and they have like a four-cylinder motor in it. So a buddy of mine here in town that actually owns the bike shop, he's going to rent a couple cars, and him and there's some rich guys here in town that also go to our track here in town. They're going to go do this 24 hours of Spa race in these cars, and they asked me if I wanted to come do it. So I want to do that kind of stuff where it's not like I still want to drive. I'd like to drive some LMP3 stuff. I have the license now to do that because I got downgraded to an amateur license. I'm a silver now.
Perfect.
I'm gonna try to go for a bronze because I turned 55 in December. So you're supposed to get downgraded to bronze when you're 55, but I doubt they'll go for that. But I just would like to do a little bit of this and that,
Yeah. You is it your LMP3 car I always see you testing?
Yeah, I have my own, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I have I had a DeCoin car before, and I sold it because it was a little bit high maintenance. The CVs and CV bearings were super high maintenance on it to look after them. And I ran that car. I had that car for a couple of years, and then I sold it and I bought a Ligier. I actually bought it from George Kurtz, who runs CrowdStrike Racing. He has like three cars. I think he's got five LMP3 cars, and he had one of them he wanted. I asked him if he wanted to sell it, and he sold it to me at a pretty good deal. So that's the car I'm running right now, and I'm going to go out to the track probably tomorrow. I'm going to look at the weather. It's still pretty hot here, so I want to wait for it to cool down a little bit more, and so it doesn't motor. It gets the you have to go super early in the morning, of course. It'll run on the hot side, temperature-wise.
Right. Right. Yeah, those cars are awesome. I got the opportunity, a guy was testing out at Mosport to jump in one, and it was like, holy cow, this is a serious race car, and super I think a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah, they have quite a bit of downforce. They handle really well. They stop well, just not tons of power. It's just got enough power that you could get in trouble, but it could probably use 100 more horsepower, but at 450, it's a pretty fun car to drive, Yeah. I don't know what you thought of it. What kind of lap time does it do around Mosport?
I mean, he's like, all right, five laps, no more. And I'm like, okay, I got to get her done.
It was
I forget the team now, Mantella's car. Yeah, Mantella.
Was it the Canadian team up there, AWA?
Yep, that car.
Yeah, so that's the same car that I used to have. They run a DeCoin. So the cars handle really well, but they're a little bit tougher to maintain than the Ligier.
Right. Yeah. So
hard to get parts for, hard to get pieces for. Like I had a CV joint go out in, it blew up a CV, and it was like literally took me like 2 months to get it, and it was $12,000 for CV. It's got a whole, because they don't sell just, you got to buy the whole complete CV, inner and outer. They don't just sell it like rebuilt. Like it basically, when the CV blew up, it took the axle out with it. So then you got to replace the whole damn thing. And I think it was like $11,000, and then plus shipping and plus Jeez. Labor with some guy to do change it for me. So it ended up being like a $15,000 deal for to change one CV, you know.
That's ridiculous. Yeah, I think I did a 117, but I bet you could probably do a 114 there.
Yeah, that'd I don't know what 15. They run when they run up there. Yeah. Lap time wise.
So would you you have some desires at least to
what
do
is,
the
what does a stock what does a stock car run around there?
I've still got the lap record there at a 121.9.
That's pretty quick.
Yeah,
that's pretty bad. I would have thought that the LMP3 car would go quite a bit quicker than that than a stock car.
Yeah, I mean we're probably at the wheels maybe 70, 80 more horsepower. They've got them working pretty good now. The stock car's freaking. They have no business going around Mosport that fast.
Yeah.
So you have desires.
I can't wait to find out in your dad's car.
Right. I'll have to show him this recording here. This is Paul's case. Make your case. So you clearly have desires to run
or at least do some vintage racing with him. I'd like to drive some vintage cars too.
I mean, yeah.
The only time that I drove a vintage car, well, I've driven it twice. I ran with your dad at the they had that pro-am race at Indy, and I ran with a Canadian guy, Gary Moore. I ran with him, and we won the race. My first time in the thing. He was a super super nice guy.
Yeah, great guy. That I did that race. Maybe the year after, or so I did it with Jimmy Kite and then Bobby Labonte, and we won there. Yeah.
Yeah, Bobby's a super nice guy.
Absolutely. It was those cars are so much fun, and the best place to do it is, I don't know what they call it, I think it's like the U.S. Nationals or something at COTA, and to get to drive those, 700 horsepower Corvette at COTA is badass.
Yeah, the second time I did it with Gary, we went to the same track, and I'm out practicing in the car, and the throttle hung wide open on the car. I was like coming into down the back straightaway, and you take that left hander, and then you go into that kind of quick flat chicane where you take all the curbs at Indy.
Yeah, yeah.
So I go to turn in there, and I get off the gas, and the throttle sticks wide open. I was like, shit, and instantly I'm in the grass and I'm locked up in the grass and I clutched it and the motor, but I'm in the grass now, and it was first thing in the morning, and I can't stop. I ended up in the tire barrier, and I crunched the front fender and a little bit of the hood on it, and I come back and I'm like, what? They're like, what happened? I said, the throttle stuck wide open. They're like, yeah, right. Okay, right. So they bring the car back on the flatbed, and the throttle stuck wide open.
Right.
On the it's still wide open in the car. And they're like, "Oh shit, yeah, it is wide open." So they monkeyed around with the throttle and thought it was something or other, and fixed it, and then went out. The next practice, they went out and. Poor Gary, he went out and same thing happened to him. And he was, this time he got through that chicane, took that right hander, and then he was coming out in that long right hander that goes on to the banking between one and two, and the throttle stuck on him there. And so that's a corner where I could almost take it flat, but he couldn't take it flat. And he got out of the throttle, and the throttle stuck, and he basically drove it right into the wall. In between turn one and two at Indy, as you come out onto the banking out there, which is pretty tricky, anyway, and it's the same thing. The throttle hung wide open on the car, and this time the car was demolished pretty good. So he didn't get to race that weekend, and they actually put me in another guy's car, which was I didn't think it would handle that well, but it was a car like your dad had. It was like a 69 or 68 Corvette, and it was actually pretty fun to drive. It didn't have I think your dad's car has a big block in it, doesn't it?
Yeah, he's got a big block.
Yeah, this one had a small block in it, and I was running like second in the race, and then the guy had handed off the car to me, and we had a good pit stop, and I was running like second or third in the race. I was ahead of Matt Matty Brabham, who was in like some 63
yeah.
Corvette. That thing was super trick. I was ahead of him, and then the gearbox started like it started to not take downshifts and pop out of gear. It had a synchro mesh gearbox in it and not like a crash box. So
yeah.
like the gearbox crapped out on it, but it was fun to drive. I didn't think those cars handled that well.
No, they've got them working pretty good. You should look at, and I don't know how, you know, I think a couple guys hire drivers. We did this year, we did the Le Mans Classic race in a GT40.
Daytona?
No, at Le Mans.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was really cool. And, you know, I guess going back to the simulator stuff, that is a huge benefit,
learning that track. Well, see, that's the kind of things I'd like to do, stuff like that. So tell your dad.
Yeah, yeah.
You can be my agent on this deal.
Right.
How about that? If he's going back to Le Mans with a vintage car, tell him I'd like to go with him and run.
Right. Yeah, the problem is he's got two eager sons.
When I see him at Barrett Jackson this year, I'm going to get him wasted and then hit him up. I'm going to start giving him drinks.
Getting him wasted would be trickier than getting him to give you a ride, I think.
Yeah. Well, you need more than three drivers to go to Le Mans, don't you?
It was a neat format. No, we had three guys, like my brother, my dad, and myself, and it's 3 1-hour races within the 24 hours. So each class does their 1-hour race.
So it's not a 24-hour race then.
No,
yeah,
no.
But those old cars, I think have a hard time getting those things to run for 24 hours. But I know they do like a vintage 24-hour at Daytona.
Yep, they do that.
Is that a real 24-hour race?
That's a good question. I don't know. Yeah. Everyone tells us that, you know, the best one to do is the 6 hours of Spa and the vintage stuff. Yeah. Yeah. So you've got desires to do, clearly, to race the Pinty series, and you want to go to Mosport as opposed to the Toronto Indy, you think?
I do the Toronto Indy. I find it kind of amazing that the Pinty's guys wouldn't be like, hey, we should have Paul come and do a race when Brazil is calling for me to go down there.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Probably a little bit different deal just with those guys owning all the cars.
Yeah.
Whereas everyone here kind of has their own stuff. What you should try and work on, and it certainly hasn't been announced yet. It's just rumors. You've probably heard them too, of the Cup Series going back to Montreal along with the Pinty Series.
Yeah, that would be. I don't think they ever ran Cup. Did they ever run Cup there?
No, they ran Xfinity there. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember the last time they. I don't know if it was the last time they ran there, but I remember Robbie Gordon and somebody had a big blow up there, and Robbie decided that he was the winner, and somebody got spun out, and it was like a huge like. Melee after the race and a fight and huge fine for Robbie. But
yeah, I remember that race well. I was like a little kid sitting in the stands in the hairpin when I was like, oh, there's Robbie. He's not even going to hit the brakes here.
Yeah, I think somebody, I don't know, I can't remember what happened. I think somebody hit him and moved him out of the way, and then he got back and just like took the guy out or something. I don't even know who it was, but it was some.
Yeah, I don't know. Remember. But that's.
I don't know if it was Boris, or it could have been Boris said, wasn't it?
Yeah, it could have been. Could have very well been. But yeah, I think Robbie Gordon was a little bit of the villain in that one. I think he used the chrome horn.
I know they gave him the black flag, and he didn't come in for it, and he kept going around, and he finished first, like, but they stopped scoring him.
Yep.
And then he did donuts and everything after the race was over or something, which is like. Typical Robbie.
Yeah. No, that was great. Yeah, it they should have a NASCAR race there, because it will be the number one attendance for any frickin' NASCAR race, period, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what does the winter look like for you? You know, do you spend some time you know, kind of hitting guys up for rides, kind of seeing what's around,
not really,
training?
Not really. No, I'm going to what do I got going on? We're coming into our good season of weather now, so I want to train hard through the winter. That's obviously, you know, going to be big for me. We're going to Florida to go on a boat run from Miami to Key West with some friends in November. The only thing I have going on right now, racing wise, is I might be going back down to Brazil in December. Their last race is at Interlagos, which is a pretty cool track, and they have their NASCAR series, and they run these. It's called Copa Truck down there, which is semi trucks. So the guy who is the partner now in the NASCAR series, also in Brazil, he also owns the Copa Truck series. So they are trying to put together a deal for me to come and run in that. So they got to find a little bit of money to pay me and pay my expenses, travel down there, which is what they did for this NASCAR race. So I'm waiting to hear on that. So I've actually been on my sim prepping for Interlagos, which is a pretty fun track.
Yeah, that would be cool. Those trucks, like, I'm, you know, I can't wait to see the footage of you in those trucks. That'll be awesome.
They're fast, I guess. I guess they'll go like 150 miles an hour. And yeah, like, I've seen some of the crashes they have. Like, when they crash, it's like the thing gets like destroyed. Yeah. So it's like, I guess, you know, they're proper. I guess they're 1,000 horsepower, these trucks that they run down there, and they're super, super high tech for what they are. And there's Mercedes, and there's four or five different manufacturers in the thing. So, I mean, I'll try anything, you know, if somebody asks me to do it, I'll do it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. No, that's definitely the mark of a real racer for sure. It's funny. I was your buddy Tagliani there. Him and I were talking at the last race. Do you do the cold tub stuff?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Okay. I started doing that as well.
It's good. Go ahead.
I like it. I think, you know, I think it helps. It helps me recover from workout. I go in it for 5 minutes, and I built my own because I wanted to get one, but I started looking at them all on Instagram. You see these ads, and they're like $4,000 for this. And, you know, they're kind of expensive for what they are. And then I saw this Facebook group, like do it yourself cold plunge, and so basically guys are buy a freezer at Home Depot or wherever. Like for you guys, I bought a freezer for like $500. And I bought a thermostat, which plugs into the wall. Then you plug the freezer into the thermostat, and you can set the temperature on the thermostat to whatever temperature you want the water to be. Because if you filled up a freezer full of water and just put it on freeze, it would eventually freeze it into a block of ice.
Right.
And you couldn't get in it, right? So I have a thermostat that the freezer plugs into, and that thermostat turns on and off. And I've got it set at 45 degrees. And then, I mean, it's pretty simple. I have a fish aquarium filter for it. Like, it's like a circulating filter. And that's it. I filled the thing up with ice and water. And it's I get in it after I'm done my workout in the morning. I get in it for like 5 minutes every day. I think for sure it helps. It's a bit of a mindset too, because doing it, like just the initial getting in it, like you dread every time you got to get in it. You're like, oh my God, I got to get, it's like the first minute is the hardest. And then once you're in it, once you get past the 1 minute mark, it's your body kind of like goes into this. It's a weird feeling. Like your body goes into, you can feel the heat coming off of your body. Like there's a barrier of warmth that comes off of your body. It's a weird sensation once you're in that cold water. And then, you know, but the biggest thing I hear about it is that if you stay in a cold plunge for 5 minutes a day, your body goes into hyper calorie burn after you do that. And your body wants to warm itself back. So it's burning calories like crazy. So like I've been trying to, you know, lose this weight and lose it. So burning calories and burning fat, they say that the cold plunge, it really promotes that quickly, even more so than working out. Like that's for whatever reason, your body trying to warm itself up, it just burns calories like crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Tagliani story is I've got the same thing at my house. I've got the deep freeze, and that's what I use, right? And I just run it on a Christmas tree timer. So I don't have the thermostat, but I just whatever, run it for 4 hours. But I've got this little portable one that I brought to three.
I'll send you the thermostat that I have because I got it off Amazon and it was like $30.
Perfect. Yeah,
And it just
I need
and
to do
you
that.
can set the temperature. I mean, I can set it to wherever I want. I can set it down to like 35 degrees if I want. But I don't have it that cold. But you can kind of, if you want to start getting it colder and colder, you know, I don't know what temperature you have yours at, but they say like I have mine set at like 45 degrees, and when I get in it, it's like 46 degrees. But they say like 40 is like optimal.
Yeah. I keep it at 40, and my brother keeps it even colder. So you got to smash the ice sometimes to get in, and there's like a
Really?
little ring of ice.
It's,
Yeah.
I tell you what, I've gotten in mine after I've kind of refilled it up with some ice, because when I get in and out of it, I spill some water out of it, so I've got to occasionally top it back up. So I'll buy a couple 20-pound bags of ice, and I've gotten in it back in it when it's like after I've put in like 40 pounds of ice back in it, and it's like when it's high 30s, 38, 39, it's a big difference between that and 45. It's like, holy shitballs, it's cold, you
Yeah.
know?
Yeah, absolutely. So I got those Instagram ads for those little like portable ones. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna bring this to Three
To
Rivers because
track.
it's gonna be hot as shit there. So
Yeah.
Tag sees it there, and he gets the same one but for his house. So he's got it like
Yeah.
in his shower, and he's like, "What do you do, man? What do you do?" Because I go to the convenience store every day, and they're looking at me weird. I'm a slave to the ice. I bring the ice every day to my house. I refill
Brother, brother,
it.
brother, what do you do?
Exactly that. So I set him up with the. I'm like, dude, you need a freezer. You can't be spending
Yeah.
2 hours a day making ice.
No. No, it's I didn't want to deal with that either.
Yeah.
So.
That's good. Well, man, really appreciate you coming on. Hope to see you back in some stuff. You know, I love that you're running the whole season. I think that's cool. I'm a big fan of short seasons. Like, you know, that
Yeah.
SRX deal was cool. So, would love to see you in some vintage stuff and you know, ideally in the Pinty series.
All right, I'm gonna make you my agent now. You're gonna have to work on your dad. Make it
All right.
happen.
All right. If not, I'll make some calls. I'll make some calls. See who else, if the old man's too stubborn.
All right.
All right. Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye.
See you guys next week.